It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in Wisconsin are on the rise. That has teachers unions calling on the state to mandate a switch to virtual classes in every school. We'll hear from a union leader about their concerns. First, Governor Tony Evers said earlier this year that 2020 would be the year of clean drinking water in Wisconsin. That was after problems with the state's water quality came up in recent years, including lead pollution in Milwaukee, groundwater contamination in agricultural areas, and PFAS chemicals being found in wells in the Marinette area. Wisconsin is not alone in dealing with these issues. Our next guest has worked for decades with hundreds of communities around the country to help them hold their leaders and local industries accountable for clean water. Well, the problem is a big one, she says. Everyday people have the power to help solve it. Aaron Brockovich is a consumer advocate, environmental activist, and author of the new book, Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We, the People, Can Do About It. Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me. I hope everyone's well.
Before we get into this water crisis, the water concerns facing people around the country, let's look at the second key part of your book, What People Can Do About It. You make a strong case that people at the local level have the power, are really the key to solving these problems. Why is that?
Well, you know, I've been down on the ground working with communities for 20 plus years, and we do share in the book a glimpse of some of those communities. And it's about coming in and educating them oftentimes on a particular issue. Sometimes they don't know, they speculate, they're not listened to. So the first step is when they feel that they're listened to, that you can have an open conversation. And then we give them information about what we do know, whether it be a chemical, what may be going wrong in the municipality, and kind of how water works. And you can often see the light bulb just turn on for them. And I got to tell you here, 99% of the time it's moms, and they're just not about to deal with or accept that, well, we have lead in our water and we're going to do nothing about it. So they make it their job. They make it their business, their obligation, their duty, their responsibility to find out what's happening. And then when we see their communities start to, you know, collect together, they become more empowered. They become a larger voice. We encourage them to get involved at local city council levels. So much happens there. Oftentimes we don't know that, where permits are passed or denied. You know, the moms of Tonganoxie, Kansas showed us when they got together, they didn't want a Tyson manufacturing plant in town. They got to city council. They worked with city council and they were able to stop that from being built in their neighborhood. So it's a matter of making a phone call, you as a community member getting curious, being willing to listen and ask questions, getting your neighbors involved. And from there, we can see actual changes when they get to city council. And from there, oftentimes they see a result. We see that everywhere, like Hannibal, Missouri. One of the moms ran for city council. She won. They did a referendum. The town had been educated on chloramines. They voted no. And I'm happy to tell you, because of that, they now have lead-free water. So people need to remember, they do have the power to act. And there are ways that you can strategically turn that anger into action and become activated and make changes in your own backyard and not assume that something or someone is going to come fix it for you.
People might assume that, okay, maybe there's isolated incidents of bad water somewhere in the country, but we've got environmental protection laws, the Clean Water Act, drinking water protections at the federal level. There's a local municipal agency looking out maybe for my water. Why should we be more concerned about our water wherever we are?
Because that's not what's happening. That's why, you know, we wrote Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis. And it gives us a look into how a system works, what is really happening at the EPA level. And none of this is about wanting to bash EPA. There are scientists and people and chemists and all kinds of walks of life in there that are amazing, that want to do great things. Oftentimes they're underfunded. They're not able to move forward in a situation. And the system itself, however it was designed and well-intended back when, over time has been corrupt and has started to unravel. And we share with you in the book, and I think the best way to understand this and how the agency works is PFAS, which I know is a problem in Wisconsin. It's been a problem in the water. They're finding it in the deer. They've put out advisories. And PFOA, which is perfluorooctanoic acid, and PFOS, perfluorooctane acid, is known as Teflon, Scotchgard, firefighting foam. It is the largest emerging contaminant in the history of this country. And how it worked was many decades ago, 3M and these companies gave notice to the EPA that this was going to be a chemical to look out for. So what the agency did was set a guideline, not an MCL, a guideline. And we explain the difference between that for you in the book. But so they set a guideline of 400 parts per trillion. So off we go. Now we have municipalities that can run this through their system up to 400 parts per trillion. So once this has been set, the EPA will commission a study to understand what this chemical will or won't do in the environment or to public health and welfare. These studies are very expensive, and these studies take a very long time. They can take 10 years, 15 years before we know the outcome of a chemical that we've already allowed to come into the marketplace. So it's a little ass backwards if you ask me. So here's what happened about 4 years ago. The studies were complete, and guess what? We have a problem with PFAS and with PFOA and these forever chemicals. They're very difficult to remove from the environment, but we now also know through the studies that it can cause testicular cancer, kidney cancer, ulcerative colitis, thyroid disease, reduced fertility. So now the agency has to go, oh my gosh, we have to reduce this 400 parts per trillion to 70 parts per trillion. Then we have a whole municipal system going, wait a minute, we don't have the filtration to bring it down to 70 parts per trillion. And then on my end, I get all the emails from the communities. What are we supposed to do? We've got a notice. Our well water's contaminated. Our water's contaminated. We didn't know it. We've been drinking this for 20 years. Is this why my daughter has thyroid disease or my son has testicular cancer? And all of this can be and should be different if we take a look at the system and why it's not working. We should be doing studies on these type of chemicals before they're ever allowed to be introduced into the environment, knowing that it could get into our water supply. So it's mind-blowing for people. We've had this assumption or this idea how something works. And we as people can get involved and find out how something's working. And when it's not, work together to change that. So people shouldn't just assume. We want to believe, and I want to believe. And I've been out on the ground long enough. Oftentimes, for a whole host of reasons, those agencies that we feel have been watching over us, in fact, have been absent.
We're talking to Erin Brockovich. Her new book is Summer Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We the People Can Do About It. Erin, a lot of your book talks about, you know, working at that local level about that particular problem. Are you also looking for systemic change in how we deal with these issues to maybe prevent it from becoming a problem in the first place?
Yes, and we should. You know, we can't, whether it be an industry or, you know, it makes me think of PG&E. It makes me look at 3M and PFAS, all the corporations that use hexavalent chromium, continue to kick the can down the road. It's not working for a lot of reasons. On the upfront, it's always about the money. And on the upfront, It really should be about infrastructure and reinvesting some of your profits into your infrastructure, safety first over the money. And it gets kicked down the line. And then down the line, guess what we get? A polluted environment, a sick society, and corporations who really don't like getting sued and are paying out $30 billion for something that could have prevented in the first place. So we do need to look at that. And there are things within our municipal system where, for the same reason on the upfront, they found a loophole in the Safe Drinking Water Act that should be closed. They're not managing their dirt appropriately. And because of that, they're adding ammonia, which is creating lead contaminations, further deterioration to the infrastructure. We're seeing more Legionella outbreaks. This is precisely why we're seeing that amoeba outbreak down in southern Texas, and we lost a six-year-old boy. These are things systemically across the board that we could be doing that makes the system safer, the water safer, and the environment cleaner, and less death and disease to our society.
We're talking to Erin Brockovich right now. Her new book is Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We the People Can Do About It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about water quality in your community? What has you worried? Have you already dealt with contaminated water in your home? Is there an effort, maybe a citizen-led group in your area that's watching out for water quality? Do you have questions about what to do if you suspect there's a problem? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with environmental advocate Erin Brockovich about her new book. It's called Superman's Not Coming, America's National Water Crisis and What We, the People, Can Do About It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has polluted water impacted your family or your community? Are you concerned about the potential for water pollution in your part of the state? Are you wondering how to get more info on your water or what to do about it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Erin, in your book, you talk not just about water quality, you also later in the book get into water quantity, concerns about our groundwater, our drinking water supply now and in the future. What has you worried?
Well, we're all talking about climate change and, you know, I'm often surprised that people don't see that climate change is water. And it is. We're starting to see that now with more hurricanes, more flooding, seawater intrusion into the municipalities. We can't drink salt water. The floods, the pollution that comes out with it, how water systems can be shut down for weeks. We're also seeing droughts, serious droughts out here on the West Coast where I live. We do have some locations where city council is starting to get concerned about with droughts and aquifers or pollution in the aquifers that we can't access or we're not going to have that water. And we bring this up in the book. We all are familiar with Day Zero in Johannesburg, South Africa, where they were going to run out of water. And they did something that I wish we would start doing. And that is they began to get prepared for that scenario. The people cooperated. They rationed. They worked together. They worked with their agencies to divert Day Zero, which they did. We just aren't addressing that these issues are here. We end up fighting over them. We are facing climate conditions. We can call it, I know that can frustrate people, but we can call it weather pattern changes. We are seeing a difference. We are seeing heat domes here in California. We're seeing flooding and more hurricanes. We're experiencing drought. We're all reading about these fires that are burning hotter than they've ever burned. Something is different. And what we need to do is begin to look at where we are going to run short on water. We had a situation here with Los Angeles Southern Municipal Water District. Their backup if you will, aquifer they can't use anymore because of pollution. There's locations where wells are running dry or being bled dry from fracking issues. And we have got to begin to have the conversation. This is our climate, our water, our planet that we all are going to need to live on to survive. What is happening? Acknowledge it, empower people to get involved and start taking the appropriate steps and preparedness for events that could happen. If they don't happen, hallelujah. If they do happen, at least we are prepared and we have a plan and a strategy how we can get through that worst case scenario.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234 as we talk to Aaron Brockovich about her new book, Superman's Not Coming, about water quality issues in the United States. John is with us in Kewaunee. John, hi.
Well, it's a real honor to speak with you, Aaron, and talk about this issue. I live in Kewaunee County, which is, from an agricultural pollution standpoint, sort of the love canal of Wisconsin. The problem that we have here in Wisconsin, particularly with the dairy industry, but in fact with all of agriculture, is the industrialization of agriculture and the fact that we now have so-called dairy farms with 5,000, 8,000, 10,000, 12,000 head of cattle all concentrated in one location. And we're using potable water to transport their manure to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 acres of fields around those CAFOs, sometimes across county borders and into other counties. And here in northeast Wisconsin, we live on the limestone karst topography where we have broken limestone bedrock, which is very shallow. In some places, it's actually emerging from the soil. In many places, it's only a foot or 2 foot deep. And anything that's put on the top of a field goes immediately into that rock formation and travels within 24 hours into the water supply. So 28% of our wells in northeast Wisconsin and in Kewaunee County have been demonstrated by an EPA study to be polluted with pathogens and chemicals from agricultural producers in our area. The problem we have is that the EPA and the Clean Water Act only addresses point source pollution, and non-point source pollution is not meaningfully addressed in the law.
John, thanks a lot for calling in. Aaron, what advice would you have for someone like John who's been working on this issue and feels like the law that's out there isn't helping?
First of all, I hear where he's coming from, because agriculture and these very large CAFO fields are very big issues to our water supply specifically. We're seeing a lot of toxic algae blooms happening. They've got all the manure that comes off and the nitrate. And we have to understand, you know, water composition is amazing. There's not one body of water anywhere in the world that's the same. And so they will have their own reactions. So from the agriculture, we are seeing the toxic algae blooms. We are seeing, as he brought up, the pathogens, which is a really big problem. And municipalities, again, this is about being prepared and knowing what's happening in and around your own backyard, thank you, that they need to clean those pathogens, which is dirt, all the dirt, so it doesn't get into the water supply, where we see Legionella outbreaks, we're going to get toxic algae blooms, we're going to see the brain-eating amoebas. I agree with him, and the frustration is we have a Safe Drinking Water Act that was well-intended, that we have found ways to cheat that system. We have antiquated policies and laws that we need to look at that need some reform and or changes. What we had then may have worked at that time. We now have bigger CAFOs. We now have more issues with the water and allowing the dirts to come through and cheating the system and adding ammonias. We can get in there. And for your caller, I want you to keep going. You can email me erin@brockovich.com. We can network you with other people in your area doing the same thing, and how we can come in at city council level and look at different policies, different permitting, how we can change, because you can change them. And it will come when you have the power of more with you. It's a valid point. It is happening. Don't give up. And again, you can email me. I'll put my email out there. It's easy. It's erin@brockovich.com. And we will need to address antiquated policies and laws that aren't working or even applicable to what's happening with our water and our environment today. It can be challenged.
John, thanks for that call. We'll go to Chrissy in Madison now. Chrissy, hi.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for taking my call. And again, it is also, for me, a very big honor to be talking to you guys. It's amazing that John just called and told that story, because we have a very similar story in Crawford County over in the Driftless area. We have that same crest limestone, and a CAFO is being proposed to be put in on a ridge above several houses and communities that surround it. And we are working very hard to try. We got a moratorium passed to try to do water studies. But because of COVID, everything has been pushed back. We attempted to get an extension on our moratorium, and they are not allowing it. And so we have no time and no studies done. And this CAFO is going to end up going in, and we're all worried. And I'm wondering, do you have any, where are our next steps? What can we do now?
Chrissy, thanks for the call. And Erin, hold that thought. We're coming up on news now, but Chrissy, listen in, and we'll get a response from Erin Brockovich. We're talking to her about threats to water quality in the United States. She says local people can do a lot to make a change. Her new book is called Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We, the People, Can Do About It. More answers to your questions at 800-642-1234, including Chrissy's question. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Erin Brockovich about her new book, Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We the People Can Do About It. Before the news, we heard from Chrissy in Crawford County, who is working to halt construction of a large CAFO farm on a ridge near her home. She's wondering what the next steps could be for her and her neighbors. They got a moratorium to get some water testing. COVID's making water testing harder to do. Erin, your thoughts for Chrissy?
So for Chrissy and your earlier caller, they're both on CAFO. So again, this is about networking. There's probably a lot more locations in and around Wisconsin that may be dealing with issues like Chrissy and your earlier caller. So find a way for them to network. Two, you've made great strides, and good for you. And you've had a setback. This is really important, and I have seen it, and I am speaking from experience, not just my own, but again, 20 plus years on the ground, in and out of communities across this country. Don't let a setback completely defeat you, and expect that to happen. Regroup and go at it again. This is a really important issue. So I'm glad you called. You've made great strides. You'll even see, if you have the book or get a chance to read the book, that other communities, when they have that setback, they reorganize again. They'll come back again to that city council. So don't, just because you got knocked back a couple of yards, don't drop the ball. Pick it back up. You may go rush 90 yards. Network with other people. And just in this short time on this radio show, two phoners have been the same issue. Start networking. Make your voice heard. This is about, I can't be everywhere at once. You can email me. I've offered that. We will help you with this issue in Wisconsin, we will Facebook it. We will work with you on how to organize so you can be heard. And I really hope that for them calling in our conversation today, having the opportunity to be here, that everyone listening considers this their invitation to get involved. We oftentimes don't, because we think we need a PhD or we need to be a politician. You don't have to be that to be aware of, be informed, and educate yourself on how to protect your water. You've got to know your power, and Chrissy just showed that. They made it their job to get involved, and they've made some good steps. Three, get curious. This is about not taking anything for granted. Get curious. Find out about CAFOs. Look at your water quality reports. Make a phone call to, you know, your local Department of Natural Defenses that's working with and put out the advisory on what's happening with the deer, or your Department of Health Services. Separate your fact from fiction, and oftentimes that deception, but you're going to have to do your homework. Speak the truth. Don't be afraid to publicize it. Put the pressure on. Get your local media involved, such as this radio show. Continue to make signs. Garner support for your cause. If we're dealing with water pollution, shield yourself. And again, this is everything that we've just talked about. So you know what is the best filtration or what you need to do at your own home and at your own tap. Step eight we talked about is just no more no's. It's just no more no's. You've got to continue to pressure your elected officials to be transparent with you. And when you have community support and in numbers, you will oftentimes be heard. And mostly, you've got to be proud of yourself, that you had the courage, you made the effort, you made it your job to educate yourself about this issue and to speak up, and that you are, have, or will make that difference for your community.
Thanks again to Chrissy for the call. We've got a couple listeners wondering about a lead pipe issues and what communities can do to tackle those. And obviously, lead and water are a problem in Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Okay, well, so here we go. So the biggest problem with this lead contamination, we've all seen what happened in Flint, Michigan. We talk about the ladies of Hannibal, Missouri, that they had lead in their water. So there's three things, and we're going to talk about water that are problems: industrial pollution, chloramines, and our infrastructure. You've got older infrastructure in lots of places in this country and lead pipes. One of the biggest reasons that we are seeing lead contamination is the use of chloramines. Water 101. Most of our water comes from surface, rivers, creeks, tributaries. And yes, we pull water from aquifers. That varies on the time of year, whether we're blending, etc. But most water comes from surface. In water is organic matter, which is dirt. When dirt comes into the municipality, we chlorinate it. We need to, so we don't have pathogens and all these outbreaks. What happens when chlorine and organic matter meet is it creates a toxic compound called trihalomethanes. They're very regulated by the Safe Drinking Water Act. Well, here's where we have a problem. The Safe Drinking Water Act requires, when you cannot control your dirt and you have trihalomethanes in the water, you have to put on the appropriate filtration. But we don't do that because we like to take shortcuts and we want to save money, or we don't have the money. So they've started adding ammonia. This is chloramines. This is a big national argument going on, which leads to precisely your lead problems, because the chloramine renders chlorination less effective. So we're seeing more Legionnaire outbreak, and it creates a caustic situation in the distribution system, causing the lead, the iron, and the manganese to precipitate out and be delivered to your tap. Keep up that fight. It's going to be a local one, a state one, can be a federal one. Chloramines is damaging the system. It's causing lead contamination, Legionella. Get your community together. Again, you can email me. We'll get you organized with information if you're not finding it. Get to your city council. That is precisely what happened in Hannibal. And because the town was educated, city council did a referendum. Do you want ammonia? Yes or no? The community said no. It's now a law. No more ammonia. We have to close that loophole. I suspect this is why you're seeing these lead issues in Wisconsin. Again, you can email me. Do not give up. You're on the right track. Get your community together. Get to city council and close that loophole in Aaron, using ammonia in our system.
Aaron, that's all the time we have. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. You know what? I must say this. It is so difficult to have a conversation about water because it's not a soundbite. It's a story. And so thank you for giving me the time today.
And thanks for being with us. Erin Brockovich talked with us about her new book, Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We the People Can Do About It. Coming up, COVID-19 cases are on the rise in Wisconsin. That has teachers worried about in-person learning. We'll talk to the head of a big teachers union in the state about a call to move classes entirely online. That's coming up next here on Central Time. When the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued a moratorium on evictions, it warned that rising homelessness could make the pandemic worse. It's not an abstract worry. In cities like Milwaukee, landlords have filed for thousands of evictions since March. WPR's Bram Sable-Smith explains that catching the coronavirus is just one of the many health risks that come with losing your home.
Even before Robert Pettigrew learned he might get evicted, his doctor gave him some bad news.
She said, "Robert, I want to talk to you and your wife." She took us to another room and she said, "You have an evasive mass on your lung."
It was March. The doctor advised Pettigrew to leave his job staffing the front desk at a Motel 6 in Milwaukee. She even wrote him a doctor's note saying his lung condition put him at high risk of developing deadly complications from COVID-19.
Working at a motel is kind of hard to social distance. You know, people are in your face all times.
Now, being out of work has put Pettigrew's housing in jeopardy. The housing he needs to social distance. The home where he can rest and recover if doctors determine he needs lung surgery. In August, Pettigrew's landlord filed to evict him and his wife when they couldn't make rent. Complicating things further, Pettigrew's apartment has gotten fuller since his diagnosis. His daughter arrived in May from St. Louis after the daycare where she worked shut down. She brought her 3-year-old son with her.
This is my grandson. Say hi.
For millions of Americans like the Pettigrews, a home is a hard thing to hold on to right now. The CDC's eviction moratorium, announced earlier this month, explicitly tries to avoid housing instability. The idea is that family members should not be doubling up in housing or moving into homeless shelters right now. Emily Benfer of Wake Forest University researches the link between housing and health.
These are all settings where you increase your contact with other people, and by virtue of that, you increase your risk of contracting COVID-19 and spreading that virus.
Benfer says a growing body of research also links housing insecurity to other poor health outcomes, depression, delayed childhood development, and other respiratory diseases, to name a few. And the health problems can crop up even before families lose their home.
Overwhelming data demonstrates the link between the threat of eviction and anxiety and depression and stress.
Benfer says the eviction moratorium is a good first step. But without additional funds for rental assistance, the order merely stalls America's eviction crisis rather than solve it. States have directed hundreds of millions of federal stimulus dollars into housing aid, but it's not enough. One estimate suggests Americans are over $21 billion behind in rent payments right now. Then there are the Americans who have already dealt with losing their homes, like Nicole McMillan. She was laid off in March from her job managing vacation rentals in Fort Myers, Florida. Soon after, she also lost her apartment where she lived with her 2 children.
I actually contacted a doctor because I thought mentally I can't handle this anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go.
But that doctor was not taking new patients. Her children are living with their fathers right now while McMillan gets back on her feet. In Milwaukee, Robert Pettigrew started working odd jobs like mowing yards or cleaning cars, work that limits his exposure to the virus. But it only brings in enough money for food. Then in August, he had a job cleaning some store windows when he saw a sign taped inside, a paper sign offering rental assistance.
The good Lord put me where I needed to be.
A local nonprofit paid its landlord directly for rent through September. He's thankful for the help, but he doesn't want pity. Life, he says, just kicks you in the butt sometimes.
But I'm the type of person, I'm going to kick life ass back.
The CDC's moratorium could help someone like Pettigrew stay in their home through December, but it's not automatic. Renters have to submit a form to their landlords, and starting in January, they may still be on the hook for all the rent payments they missed or face eviction again. Bram Sablesmith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
That story comes from a partnership between WPR and Wisconsin Watch. Now, teachers' unions across the state are calling on Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm to mandate all classes shift from in-person teaching to virtual instruction as the number of COVID-19 cases continues to climb. According to the Wisconsin DHS, there were 2,887 new positive cases in the last day. This comes after a spike statewide last month, which saw multiple record-breaking increases. Our next guest joins us to talk about her union's demands for the rest of the school year. Amy Mizialko is the president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. Amy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
What exactly are you and your colleagues calling for from Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm?
We are asking the Department of Health Services designee Andrea Palm to immediately order all Wisconsin K-12 schools, colleges, and universities to begin virtual instruction with no face-to-face instruction until community spread of the virus is contained, along with required gating criteria and plans that are feasible with necessary PPE and resources, plans that are confirmed by DHS, and that there is coordination between DHS and the local public health authority to conduct regular inspections.
So far, it's been left up to local districts working in some cases with health authorities in their areas. Some districts have made the decision to go all virtual, some of the biggest districts. What's wrong with leaving it at the local level?
Well, we can see what's wrong with leaving it at the local level. You have exponential spread in the state of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin, the reddest of red, and number three in COVID cases per capita. It is 2 weeks ago today that Heidi Hoosley, the first public school teacher in Wisconsin to die from COVID-19, she was diagnosed, hospitalized, and died within 9 days. So this isn't something that individuals can just pass the buck on and throw their hands up and say that this is a local issue. This is something that has to be dealt with in a systemic way from government. And Governor Evers isn't doing enough. Governor Evers needs to instruct his Department of Health designee, Andrea Palm, to put out this order to close Wisconsin schools to face-to-face instruction so that we can keep students and educators safe, and frankly, so that we can stop contributing to unnecessary community spread.
What are you hearing from your colleagues around the state who might be in schools, maybe right now or teaching today, or who are worried about the prospect of going back if they're virtual now?
It is on the mind of every educator and, you know, certainly every family as well. Students are also worried. You saw, I'm sure, the news yesterday with, I think it is 12 schools in the Racine Unified School District with known COVID-19 cases, and that's with no students present. That's just with staff in the building, begging the question, why is Superintendent Galleon forcing teachers to come into the building and teach when we are safer at home? You can see what has been going on in Kenosha with their school board voting a couple of days ago that there should be spectators and cheerleaders at the football game starting immediately. I have seen pictures on my social media timeline of, you know, families and parents very, very concerned, and rightfully so. And we are not seeing people who have the authority and obligation to take action to protect Wisconsinites. We are not seeing them take that action.
We're talking to Amy Mizialko, president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, looking at calls from teachers unions around the state to close schools around the state, go all virtual as the COVID-19 numbers go up here in the state. Amy, critics of this might say, well, hold on, there's a big trade-off here. We know we're going to lose some in the quality of education for kids. Some kids are going to be left behind, especially if they don't have internet access or have special needs that are hard to meet online. What would you say to those concerns?
The safety of students, educators, and Wisconsinites is of first and foremost primary importance. My nephews are learning at home, and they certainly miss their peers and their, you know, regular face-to-face interaction at school. But until we have leadership, you know, Donald Trump has abdicated his leadership. So has Betsy DeVos. And so this rolls down to the state level. And so it's now time for Governor Evers and Andrea Palm to do what we elected them to do. This is the most basic entry level task, and it is their obligation to enact it. The Supreme Court decision in the spring did nothing to hamper Andrea Palm's authority to take action to protect the safety and well-being of Wisconsinites. I'm in addition to Kenosha and Racine, there are other examples. We know that the mayor of La Crosse has personally reached out to the president, imploring him not to come to Wisconsin because of the uncontained exponential spread of COVID-19. So everyone wants to be back in schools, in our classrooms, face-to-face with our students. But to do that and to get there, we have to take two steps back, tamp this down, get it under control, so that we can resume. But it's completely unsafe to do so now.
Amy, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Amy Mizialko is the president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. She joins us today to talk about teachers unions across the state calling on Department of Health Services Secretary Designee Andrea Palm to mandate that classes move entirely online as COVID-19 cases rise in the state.